Okay, good evening. Can you hear me okay? Too loud? All right. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak here tonight about the work that Eleanor Ostrom and I are undertaking, studying ways to analyze knowledge as a commons and hoping to find better ways and deeper understandings of the knowledge commons. I'll be talking about our theoretical approach, and I have to warn you, I'll probably also interject some personal opinions. Eleanor Ostrom, as you know, is the grand dame of the commons, one of the most cited social scientists in the world, and particularly because of her prolific work on the commons, common pool resources, and collective action, she's published well over 100 articles and chapters on the commons and over 10 books. But her award-winning book, Governing the Commons, published in 1990, has been translated into several languages and is used often as kind of the Bible on the subject throughout the world. We are located at the Workshop in Political Theory and Policy Analysis at Indiana University. It's an institute that was founded by Lynn Ostrom and her husband Vincent in 1974. Both Lynn and Vincent wrote their dissertations on water resources as a commons. Pretty unusual. Vincent's was in the 50s and Lynn's was in 1965, and it focused on the concept of public entrepreneurship. She wrote about public entrepreneurship in the California water systems. 40 years ago, in the beginning of her dissertation, she wrote, "The traditional literature of political science and economics has given little consideration to the strategy used by individuals in organizing public enterprises to provide public goods and services. Economists have long been concerned with entrepreneurship, but have largely confined their analysis of entrepreneurship to the private market economy." So public entrepreneurship is a kind of an engaged and focused sort of collective action, and it starts with the individual. Now, over the past 30 years, the workshop has attracted many, many hundreds of scholars from around the globe who have come here to study the relationship between resources and institutions. And institutions here meaning rules. Researchers have combined fieldwork, case studies, theoretical analyses, experimental economics, and game theory in order to better understand how people with bounded rationality can come together, make rules in order to share, manage, and sustain, or not, resources from community forestry, grazing lands, fisheries, to apartment buildings, playgrounds, and to genetic code and air slots. The workshop library contains the world's largest collection specifically devoted to the commons. In 2002, we launched the Digital Library of the Commons, DLC, as a gateway to the international interdisciplinary literature on the commons. It contains a self-publication portal, an archive of recently digitized older commons papers and dissertations, and the comprehensive bibliography on the commons with 40,000 records, 6,000 abstracts. We use ePrints 2 and are OAI compliant, of course. I'd like to talk about my curious title. I don't know if anybody ever uses the term collectiva actionismus, but it sounded like a good pun. In the years between Garrett Hardin's Tragedy of the Commons, Science Magazine, 1968, and the first Earth Day in 1972, I was a student at the universities of Munich and Regensburg. I was a young lefty, now I'm an old lefty. My children are lefties. And besides studying vergleichende Literatur, comparative literature, I was often in the streets protesting the Vietnam War along with many thousands of my fellow comrades. Engaged in discussions in the local Kneipen afterwards, my German friends would frequently accuse me and my countrymen and women, Americans, of actionismus, so action without theory. die Amerikaner, sie können nicht Theorie leiden. Oder die hassen die Theorie, die Amerikaner, die sind nur Aktionisten. So they just can't stand theory or the Americans. So at their suggestion, I underwent a year-long sentence to what was then called Kapitalschulung, which was day by day, page by page, reading Das Kapital, and followed by detailed discussion. I was hoping to breathe in some reine German theory. So now, more than 30 years later, it's a take great pleasure in being on the theory end of an Aktionismus field. We really need to better understand these resources and the communities involved and the rules in use if we want to sustain and preserve them. But before I move on, I do want to say that I would, however, like nothing better than to see 50 or 100,000 people out on the streets this evening protesting the corporate political war on ideas, theory or no theory. We desperately need more and louder voices. What Lynn and I are working on is, how can we get our hands around this elephant? This complex, multi-layered, rapidly changing global resource of the knowledge commons. Is it possible to draw from the rich corpus of research applied to the natural resource commons in order to better illuminate the intellectual commons? Is it feasible to apply similar frameworks and methodologies to study the digital ecosystems? A little bit of history. The dedicated study of the commons, any type of commons, is quite recent. Hardin based his 1968 narrative of the tragedy of the commons on an article by William Lloyd, published around 1837. In the early 1950s, before that, there hadn't been too much written. Scott Gordon and Anthony Scott in the 50s demonstrated the importance of economic analysis applied to the former biology field of fisheries. But then only a few others like Siriasi Wantrup until 1968 and TOC, Tragedy of the Commons. In the early 1980s, the U.S. National Research Council brought together an international, interdisciplinary group of scholars together in order to study why the African region of the Sahel was eternally confronted by drought. And this was the initial focus of CPR work. Was this a classic case of a tragedy of the commons, or was it more complex than that? It was. A few years later, some of these scholars founded the International Association for the Study of Common Property. And since the late 80s, studies on the commons have grown exponentially, and most all of these focus on natural resources, shared land, forests, fisheries, wildlife, pastures, agricultural fields, water resources, and irrigation systems. These are the traditional commons with ancient systems, many still robust today, where sustainability of the resource necessitates cooperation, trust, and reciprocity. It's amazing, though, how even to this day, how many of these studies, of these thousands of studies, are still driven by the Hardin narrative. They still want to demonstrate that Hardin was not really describing the commons, but rather an open access situation. That it wasn't a realistic situation because there was no communication between the actors. The commons is not a quaint medieval system, but rather it thrives today. Individuals can be driven by altruism as well as self-interest. And that issues of heterogeneity and gender can directly affect the outcomes of a resource and so forth, but all kind of circling around the TOC Hardin narrative. There were also have been parallel studies on the commons, on the history of the European land enclosure movements. and a separate literature on the common good, the village green, and with the connection of the commons and the democratic process, but just about zero overlap with the natural resource commons literature and research. Now, in the past 10 years, there's been a really pretty rapid rise in research and literature on new types of commonses. Most of these, or many of these at least, are global commonses. These are atmosphere, outer space, Antarctica, deep oceans, the electromagnetic spectrum, genetic code, knowledge, and the digital commons. And all of these resources have in common this. They are traditional public goods, non-rivalrous, with low excludability, where new technologies have come in and enabled the capture and privatization of those once free resources. But unlike the enduring natural resource commons, these are new commons and have no path-dependent rules in place and often no dedicated community to protect and manage these resources. Focusing on knowledge and digital information, we might ask, what makes knowledge a commons? And how can we recognize a new commons, a new knowledge commons from none? Well, if we recognize them and see them in the context of former public goods turned commons or common pool resource, types of goods that, because of technologies, are now being competed for, captured, and enclosed, we can see them in a different light, maybe in an illuminated light. Knowledge artifacts, facilities, and ideas in their digital form are rapidly moving away from being public goods, and they are becoming common pool resources that must be managed. So common pool resources, or CPRs, are resources or goods with high subtractability and low exclusion. All of a sudden, in the digital environment, I can take your information and you can't have it. Knowledge was the classic example in the economics textbooks of a public good. And this knowledge is becoming less and less public and more fragile, as I know you all know. It's not just about open source. It's becoming fragile through over-patenting, copyright extension, contracts rather than sales, accidental, arbitrary, and intentional withdrawal of information. Accidental meaning broken links, arbitrary meaning publishers' discontinuation of certain journals indexed in a database, intentional withdrawal, such as just about anything the Bush administration does. It's fragile because of carelessness and the culture of carelessness, underfunded archives and libraries, publisher centralization, cyber terrorism, and perhaps the most dangerous threat, the very, very rapid morphing of public universities from mission-driven to profit-driven institutions. There are so many threats on the once robust world of knowledge, the cultural heritage of humankind, that we need a whole army of watchdogs to keep track of it all, and we need hordes of public entrepreneurs. So there is this general term of commons. It's a shared resource. And then the political economic term of common pool resource, and both of these, and I think this is important, both of these can have various types of property regimes. A common pool resource can be privately or government-owned, for instance, but when managed and harvested by a community, it can still have traits of high subtractability and low exclusion. It can still be a commons and still shared. Often in the commons literature, the term common property is used when in reality, commons or common pool resource is what is meant.
We have a curious situation of many, many tragedies going on, and I just named some, and a curious situation of a number of comedies going on. A lot of good collective action is going on, and think of OAI, think of LOX, think of Spark, think of a lot of other, think of this conference, and a lot of what's going on with open source. The term commons is useful to refer to jointness or the shared nature of a resource. And the traits of the commons are shared, multiple types of knowledge or digital commons. There's code, bandwidth, databases, libraries, archives. They could all have different physical and community characteristics and need to be examined in different ways. The commons contain both free and fee-based information. You think of the knowledge commons as any kind of information that, and I'm going to put it this way, I'm going to say scholars, the most frequent uses of high-quality knowledge. Think of any kind of information which used to be available, which is not. It contains both the public domain and copyrighted materials, must be managed to ensure sustainability and protect against threats, and it's linked with that other commons, freedom and democracy. It can involve enclosure and competition for capture, and it can be vulnerable to the tragedy of the commons and the anti-commons. So a common pool resource is not a property regime. It's a type of economic good between public and private. The way we're trying to approach this analysis is to see if we can apply a framework. The framework's called the Institutional Analysis and Development Framework, IAD. There are many studies using this. And we define institutions here, as I said before, as rules. They're the rules, norms, and behaviors that two or more people use in interacting and making decisions that produce outcomes and consequences. I decided not to use PowerPoint slides, and I'm not going to give a demonstration, but I ask you, if you're interested, Lynn Ostrow and I have two fairly recent papers up on the DLC, on the Digital Library of the Commons. If you just go to Google and do DLC, it'll come up in the first page. This IAD framework looks at the physical characteristics of the resource, the community of users, and the rules in use. It helps illuminate how patterns of interactions lead to outcomes, how the variables in action situations lead to patterns of interaction, and how they can be evaluated. If the framework does not make the whole elephant visible, at least it helps one see interrelated parts more clearly. Its foundations are drawn from the field of political economy, where understanding effects of rules and decisions on performance is critical. It gives clarity to knowledge gaps as well as governance issues, and the framework is highly compliant with the Hayekian analysis of general knowledge with place and time exigencies. We are currently working with funding from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. We hosted recently an interdisciplinary small workshop to begin discussing research, more in detail research in the commons. We brought together an interdisciplinary group of people, scholars, from many different fields, Doug Van Helling, Internet 2, who, by the way, wrote his dissertation under Lynn Ostrom in the 70s, Jamie Boyle, Clifford Lynch from the Coalition Network Information, Peter Suber, Open Archives Newsletter, Don Waters from Digital Library Federation, and Mellon. And what we're trying to do is kind of carve out a new research agenda, how to kind of write some guidelines and well, we hope a volume, on how to study the information or knowledge commons. What we're looking at is the vast literature on natural resource commons, including studies of property rights regimes, collective action, gender, ethnicity, etc. To incorporate study of institutions and institutional analysis, the relationship between people and resources is essential. The global commons and international regimes, and those particularly tricky problems of scaling up to a global level. We're looking at the growing work on complex adaptive systems, particularly vulnerability analysis, robustness, and resilience. We're looking at interdisciplinary studies on trust, reciprocity, social capital, and civil society. Institutional and ecological economics, contingent valuation, and willingness to pay. And particularly the North-South digital divide inequity. And the norm being used in more and more international treaties, common but differentiated responsibilities. So when we study this, what we're hoping is to bring a greater awareness to this kind of diehard trend of privatization and capture. How is it that we allow what really must be in this growing world, we allow public goods such as air, water, the electromagnetic spectrum, and knowledge be privatized and in the hands of corporate and government and individuals? We need to build new practices of the commons. It's hard to know if we actually have the capacity to reverse the trends of privatization. So here's my personal interjection here. And I'm basing it on my experience of 15 years at the workshop in political theory and policy analysis, working with Lynn Ostrom and Vincent Ostrom. Think like a commons. Create your own commonses. Create not hierarchies. We have enough hierarchies. Create social capital and create new social structures which are based on cooperation, respect, and reciprocity. Thank you.